Nation.
Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, November 25th, welcome, welcome, welcome on and friends to the show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. I got to start today with an anecdote. This happened to me this morning as I got to work.
Okay.
There's a voicemail on my phone, and someone kind of sounds like Ed Cunningham saying my name.
Uh-oh.
And saying there's a delivery coming to your house in 20 minutes from a company I've never heard of. Try to call the number back. It's a dead number. It doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then so I have to figure out, is the delivery actually coming to my house?
Yeah.
So I call my wife. I say, can you go home just in case? Blah, blah, blah. Then about 10 minutes later, I get a call from an actual human being like, we're 5 minutes away.
Oh.
And I said, what are you delivering? They said, we're delivering a couch.
But is this real?
It's real.
Yeah.
100% real. There's a couch in my house right now.
Congratulations.
But the entire time I'm thinking this has to be a scam.
Yeah.
Because of the method in which the message came in, the weird auto like tone of the voice, blah, blah, blah. But it goes to show I'm completely paranoid now of any message from
anywhere. And you've been waiting on this couch.
Any random number. Yeah. Even for a good I was expecting to be delivered to my house. I am now like I was 75% sure
it
was a
scam. High alert. Yeah.
And let me just say, it's not just me.
Mm-mm.
The paranoia is being fueled by the fact that scams really are being unleashed at an unprecedented level.
Yeah.
$16 billion Americans lost last year to cybercrime.
That's a lot of money.
Up 33% from the year prior. And it's not that scamming is new. It's that there's an ability to do scams at a scale that we just haven't seen before. So today we're going to peel back the curtain and show you how these scams work, the technology that's fueling them. And of course, we need to hear from you. We need your personal anecdotes better than the one that I gave to start the show.
Yeah.
We want to know, have you or someone you know been scammed? If so, share your story. Maybe it's a scam you didn't fall for, but you still want to know, like, how did that work?
You knew.
What was the goal there? Or how did they find me? 888-477-9499 is the number to call. The email is studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And the thing is, you could be as smart as you want to be, because our listeners are pretty smart. We keep up with the news, but the scammers are getting so sophisticated that they can get past even some of the best defenses. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And this is a safe space, friends. No judgment. If you fell for something or almost fell for something, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. So we have our trio of news stories.
Start us off.
I'm going to kick us off today. A viral video of federal ICE agents questioning a New Jersey resident through her Ring cam is raising a lot of questions. And this video was posted to Facebook by South Jersey Congressman Dr. Herb Conway. And it shows masked officers wearing body gear that was marked police speaking to that homeowner through the Ring camera. And the woman who the congressman said is a U.S. citizen wasn't at home at the time, but she was questioned extensively for about 10 minutes by the officers. Let's take a listen to a clip.
Burlington Township police don't have masks.
We are not Burlington County police, ma'am. We're federal agents. We need to talk to the door.
I'm not at the door. I am not at the door. I'm out of town. I had a family death.
Is here?
No, he's not.
And the ICE officers, according to 6ABC, they were looking for the woman's brother who has a pending asylum case. He does not live in that household. And according to the reporting, had not seen his sister in a couple of years. But this interaction raises a lot of questions. I mean, the mass agents were on private property. They questioned an American citizen, it appears, without a warrant. They wore gear that identified them as police, not as federal agents. And so Congressman Conway, who's a Democrat who represents New Jersey's 3rd District, he called the agent's behavior harassment. And he said the incident was, quote, deeply disturbing.
Yeah, the video footage is really striking. And the fact the woman's not even there, they don't believe her, they don't leave for a while. You know, we've been seeing all sorts of footage of immigration enforcement across the country. Some like this, some very different than this. But one thing that keeps popping up in the polls is that President Trump remains very popular when it comes to border security, mm-hmm. but increasingly unpopular when it comes to his immigration policies. And you do wonder if the divide between those two numbers reflects the videos that people are seeing, because there is sort of a striking visual image that goes along mm-hmm. with this type of enforcement. This is just the latest example.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll be hearing more about that, because there'll probably be more and more.
Story number two, Philadelphia could soon become the first American city to mm-hmm. offer a retirement savings plan to all city residents. Here's how it will work. If you work for any business in Philadelphia that does not offer a retirement plan, you would be auto-enrolled in a program called Philly Saves. And through Philly Saves, between 3 and 6% of your income would be placed in a retirement savings account like a Roth IRA or something mm-hmm. similar to that. There's no match from the employer, so it doesn't cost the business anything, but the employer would be required to enroll you, and you would have to opt out if you don't want to be part of the Philly Saves program. The money in the Philly Saves program will be managed by a city-appointed retirement savings board. There are state-level versions of this out there. It's called an auto IRA program, mm-hmm. but this would be the first run by a city in the country. The Inquirer reports council is expected to pass this measure. The mayor is expected to sign it. There still needs to be a voter referendum to establish the board that would oversee the money. So that couldn't happen until May at the earliest. But Philly Saves could be coming our way.
Pretty cool. According to the reporting, 200,000 Philadelphians work in jobs where they do not have access to a 401k. So this would be a perk for city residents. And it's pretty expansive. I mean, it applies to businesses that only have at least one employee. So that's like everybody.
I would be interesting if there was a business with no employees. I
wonder if that means you got to enroll yourself. But another thing that stood out to me is that this account travels with you. So you can go to job and you would still have this account. And if you know, like I've been had multiple jobs, your 401k kind of stays in the old account and you have to take an affirmative step to roll it over. So it makes it easier, you know, for your family if something would happen to you to get access to that money, which is generational wealth and support. So and who doesn't want to save?
Yeah, it's interesting to me. It reminds me a little bit of the conversation around the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
And the marketplace exchanges through the ACA. Mm-hmm. You know, that is intended to solve the problem, which is that if you don't work for like a major employer, mm-hmm. if you're like an hourly employee, you really can't get like health insurance, right? Yep. And so they've created a different way, sort of a different mechanism for getting health insurance to that group of workers. And this is a way to get retirement savings
to that group of workers. Yeah.
And it's because I think on some level, people acknowledge that Social Security is not sufficient.
You need multiple streams of income when you retire.
To retire,
sure.
Right? Yeah. And so it's the same thing with health insurance, right? Like what the government offers, people are acknowledging is not sufficient. So they're trying to create other workarounds to get those types of benefits to the employees who don't get them through their employer. And this is just sort of
nice
the latest
little city
way.
Perk, yeah. So third story, supporters of Frank Rizzo say that they cannot get anyone to fix the statue of the controversial leader. This is a story from Philadelphia Magazine's Victor Fiorello. And he quotes George Baquetto, the attorney who represents the Frank Rizzo Monument Committee. Baquetto claims that the statue got damaged when it was removed from its prominent position. You remember outside of the Municipal Services Building a few years ago, the city had agreed to pay to get the 10-foot bronze statue fixed. But the groups, they say they asked one foundry to do the repairs. They declined. They went to a second foundry. They declined. They went to a third. They declined as well. And according to Baquetto, they don't want to touch it, he says. He claims that, quote, the artistic community has put the word out that no foundry should repair it. And if you all know, you know, Frank Rizzo, pretty controversial figure. So he's claiming, Baquetto, that the artist community just won't do it.
And the idea is that this would be put up on private property at some point. But they, I guess they feel like they can't put it up until it gets fixed. There was an interesting insight, actually, from the artist who made the statue in that Philadelphia Magazine story. And he said maybe it would be interesting to leave it with some damage because it helps tell the story of the statue. In some ways, helps tell the story of a divisive political figure, Frank Rizzo. And I thought that was a really interesting idea. I don't think these folks will go for it because their goal is not to tell a divisive story. Their goal is to sort of...
They want him to be a hero because some people...
To honor him, right. And so I think that's where you get into sort of what do statues mean to people? Are they sort of a way to tell one version of history or to try to tell like a complete story? But I thought that idea of leaving some damage to show that the statue has moved around and tell the reasons why it has moved around was an interesting solution from the artist himself.
And people have mixed feelings about this Frank Rizzo. So, yeah, I think that actually isn't a bad idea.
No mixed feelings about scams. We hate them. We're going to talk about all of the new technology that's super fueling scams on the other side of this break. Don't go away.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Anywhere, it's Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. As long as humans have bought and sold goods, there have been scams. According to researchers, all the way back in ancient Egypt, there were shady embalmers who sold fake animal mummies to unsuspecting victims.
Today, fake mummies have been replaced with fake texts, fake phone calls, fake emails, but that's not the only thing that's changed. Technology has unleashed scamming at an epic scale, and the results are astonishing. Americans lost a reported $16.1 billion to internet criminals last year, a 33% increase over just the year prior.
And this hour, we'll talk about sim farms, voice cloning, and some of the other insidious tech that has supercharged scamming. We'll explore what you can do to protect yourself, and we'll ask whether we need better laws to protect all of us.
And later in the hour, we're going to hear from a law enforcement expert. But we start with Bob Sullivan, an all-around scam expert who hosts an AARP podcast called The Perfect Scam. Bob, thanks for being here on Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me. This is such an important topic, so I'm really glad we're going to dive into it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we want to hear from you out there. Have you or someone you know been scammed? If so, share your story. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook. Drop a comment in the chat.
And so, Bob, I wanted you to sort of help us level set and give us an understanding of what changed. We hinted to the technology at the top of the show, but I feel like the scale of the scams has grown, the number, the sophistication, the types. Can you just kind of give us an overall look at this industry and how it's grown?
Yeah, sure. It's more than your feeling or my feeling. The data backs it up. I've been covering internet crime since we were worried about Y2K. So this is a long bit of research for me. And I can tell you without question, in the last 12 to 24 months, the scale of the problem has just become immense. I mean, we're about to all sit down for Thanksgiving dinner, hopefully. And, you know, a year or two ago, you might have heard a friend of a friend who had been hit by one of these things. I promise you this week, you're going to hear about close family members and friends nearby who have been victims of big crimes and not $300 gift card kind of crimes. But now we're talking about $50,000, $100,000 cryptocurrency fueled crimes. So the number of crimes is up, as you pointed out, and the amount, the severity of the crimes has really exploded for a whole bunch of reasons, which we can get into if you like.
Yeah, let's get into it. So let's talk about the technological changes that have enabled really, really massive scale when it comes to scamming. You talked about cryptocurrency. I think the development of cryptocurrency and the normalization of it is probably one of those. But we hear about other things, sim farms, spam centers in Southeast Asia. Let's you know, peel back the layers on what this stuff is and how it enables more scamming.
Yeah, it really is a dark, perfect storm. I think we have to begin with crypto because it's almost the perfect tool if you were to invent an international crime ring, you would invent crypto because you can move money anywhere instantly. For the most part, it's irrevocable. So there's no way to claw it back like you could, say, a credit card transaction. And we even put these machines, which for a large part are fairly diabolical. These Bitcoin ATMs, which I bet some of you have seen now when you go into a convenience store or a gas station. And, you know, there's already lawsuits arguing that the vast majority of money going through those machines are from victims who are walking up at the instruction of a criminal. Mm. So we've developed this financial network, which is ideal for moving money around the world. But that's not the only factor. The pandemic is still a lingering factor in this. So you've talked about already these forced labor camps. And this story is just, I don't understand why it's not the kind of thing that we're not talking more about. But there are these scam centers, these scam complexes in Southeast Asia where these poor people show up thinking they're getting a job, and then they take their passport away, and then they are forced to spend 18 hours a day committing crimes, committing scams, committing romance scams or crypto scams or whatnot. Hundreds of thousands of these people, perhaps. And those, the evolution of those crime centers, which began essentially during COVID, when there wasn't much else for some of these urban enterprise zones in Southeast Asia to do, there were casinos that flipped over into these scam complexes. And the professionalization of the crime has allowed for the scale of these crimes to become immense just since, you know, 2020, 2021 or so.
Wow. And I want to, before we bring in, we have callers calling in and we'll get to you in just a moment. But I've heard this term. It's called pig butchering. And it's something that people who, these scammers, these many times forced scammers, they are using this method to sort of hook victims. Could you explain what that term means and how they sort of throw out these traps and ensnare victims?
Sure. And you know, actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the great things you said, Cherry, at the very beginning of this segment was this is a shame-free zone. This is a safe mm-hmm. place for us to talk about this. And I just want to digress for a moment, because I think that's the most important thing for us to, if I could have 5 seconds of somebody's yes. attention to talk about this topic, it would yes. be the silence is the tool that the criminals all use. Whatever the cover story for, whatever it's a romance scam or a crypto scam, the first instruction is always don't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. And that's very important, because often if you just, when you're in the middle of a transaction, you're buying a car, you're not too sure that this is the car you should buy, you feel weird about it, you tell a friend, even before your friend says, I don't know if that's a good idea. The words coming out of your mouth often persuade you something is not quite right.
Yeah.
It's silence is the biggest tool for these criminals. So there is so much shame associated with crimes like this. And so the term pig butchering, which is being used by law enforcement around the world right now, and it's the concept is basically you get someone involved in a cryptocurrency investment, and you persuade them with a fake website that they give you $1,000, and suddenly their $1,000 has grown to 10, 20, 30, 40. So you're fattening the animal, as it were, for a slaughter later. But it's a fairly derogatory term, because we're calling the victim a pig there.
Yeah.
And so I try to avoid using that term, but it is a term of art right now that's going around. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying anything negative towards using it exactly, but I'd rather use more positive language that makes it easier for people to come forward. No one wants to raise their hand and say, I've been a victim of the crime. And as long as you've given me this moment to talk about this, I promise you there's someone on the phone right now who's calling to say, I don't know why anyone would fall for this stuff. I'm too smart for this. Mm-hmm. These people are stupid. And that's a big part of why this crime is so successful, is because we have so much shame and natural criticism around victims of these crimes.
Just one more question about the scale and the tech changes, Bob, before we get to our callers and commenters. So you mentioned these scam centers in Southeast Asia. Some of them are in Myanmar on the Thai border, for instance, mm-hmm. Where they've professionalized scamming, and people are essentially trapped in these centers scamming 18 hours a day. In some ways, that feels a little old school. It's sort of human labor, sort of carrying out scams. Are there ways in which scamming has been automated or supercharged by technology to go beyond even what an individual used to be able to do? Like, I've heard about SIM farms. I don't know if AI is being deployed yet to sort of automate scamming. What's like the technological frontier here that might be allowing even the individual scammer to carry out more scams?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've heard there's AI in everything right now, and it's a buzzword. And you probably have heard or seen stories about things like voice cloning, where a criminal can use a tool that costs literally $5 to, you know, by the time we're done with this radio show, they could replicate my voice and call you and have it sound like me saying, you know, call my mother and say Bob's in jail and he needs money.
Yeah.
So that is happening, and there are deep fake video clones as well. I'm not as worried about those. Those are kind of sexy uses of AI. But what I am really worried about is the main limiting factor for most of these scam farms is how the English language skills and the colloquial language skills of the frontline criminals. Mm-hmm. So when they call up and they engage
the big red flag is this person doesn't understand idiomatic English. So therefore they might not be in this country.
Or they might say, are you a football fan? What team do you root for? I don't know, the Phillies, you know? Yeah. So then, you know, this person is not really from Philadelphia, right? But AI is so good at adjusting language on the fly. We used to tell people, look for misspellings. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about misspellings anymore. Chat tools, for example, are great for carrying on online romance scams. So that's where an individual frontline criminal can now attack hundreds of people simultaneously, where before there was a limiting factor there.
Wow. I want to bring in a caller who's on the line. Chris from Collegeville, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, this is Chris. I just have a comment, and thanks, Bob, for coming on the air. Bob, actually, you interviewed myself and my wife, Christy, about my father who got scammed. Over $1 million he lost to someone impersonating Alexa Bliss, who's a women's wrestling, you know, very famous women's wrestling champion. And over the course
of
about...
Thank you for...
And thanks for your interview. You know, I reached a lot of people and our family and friends. But, you know, it was just... I connect with two things you said is about the shame. I mean, my dad was always very secretive about it, even though we knew what was happening and it was destroying our family. But also about, you know, just how he, you know, he was a smart guy. He had a lot of common sense, and yet he still fell for it. And he lost all his life savings, and he was about to sell his house, too. So, yeah.
And Chris, I can hear the emotion in your voice. And I can tell that it still is impacting your family. Right? Is that the case?
Well, yes. I mean, my dad has passed away. He actually he was running after the mailman to mail money to who he thought was Alexa Bliss, and he actually fell and hit his head. So then, you know, he passed so away sad. After that 10 days later. But, you know, what he was doing during the time, you know, we tried to convince him, and he actually turned against us. He looked at the family as the enemy. You know, he believed the scammer, and he lost everything, all his life savings. He was almost 80 years old. And, you know, pretty much
he ended up filing
a
lawsuit against you, right?
He did actually file a lawsuit. Thanks for remembering, because I tried to protect some of his money and I moved it into a separate account. And then he actually sued me to get that money released back to him.
Wow.
So it was very painful overall.
Yeah. Thank you. That's Chris from Collegeville. And Chris, by the way, we are so sorry about the loss of your father and what happened to you and your family. Bob, if you want to fill out Chris's story, you know, this is, it can be very devastating to people when these types of scams happen.
I think it's important. Again, I tried to make that point at the beginning. Scams used to be about getting people to send $500 gift cards, but the scale and the pain is so much greater now. That story was so sad because and we see this all the time. Criminals who have somebody under the ether, we sometimes call it, and either, you know, a romance scam or an investment scam or whatnot. One of the first things they say is, you know, don't tell your family, or when your family finds out, don't trust them. Don't believe them. Believe me. And people who are under the ether turn against their family, their friends, everybody. I've had family members of victims call me and ask me to help intercede to try to persuade the victim who's in the middle of something that no, this isn't real. Like, I'm a professional journalist. I talk about this all week. Please stop sending this person money. And I've been unable to do that in some cases. It's very, very sad, but that just shows the power of the manipulation here.
So she comments and says, I'm a realtor and just sent out an email to my contacts this morning warning of title fraud. There are imposters posing as homeowners claiming false ownership of real property, transferring deeds to themselves, and using the property to take out loans or even sell. And that brings me to a question about what types of sort of financial transactions or kind of like psychological pain points are out there that scammers like to target. So I could imagine if it had to do with the ownership of my home or my mortgage, these are really, really, really important expenses in my life and a really important piece of property. anything, anyone messing with that or claiming to mess with that would set off huge alarm bells for me. I would have to take some action to look into it. There are other types of bills that are very important to people, heat and water, yeah, et cetera. What are some of the types of transactions that scammers like to pick at because they're manipulating something about our psychology when they're doing that picking?
Almost all these scams are about getting your emotions to go to 11 immediately.
Yeah.
So someone calls and says they're from the IRS, or for me, I don't know about you guys, but if I get a text saying I didn't pay a toll, you know, I remember one time not paying a toll during a road trip through Colorado, and I suddenly got a $100 bill because I was days late paying my toll, you know. So things like that send your emotions right to 11. And one of the generic overarching pieces of advice that we like to give that I think is effective is to just notice when you're in a normal day and suddenly you get a phone call that says you missed jury duty, we're going to arrest you. And so all of a sudden you go from 0 to 10 right away. That's what all criminals try to do. So there is no government agency, and really not even any large company, no electric company, that's going to in an instant disconnect your power or come arrest you or ask you for money. All those things happen over weeks in paper. And so the pause when you feel an emotional surge like that is really, really important.
Yeah, if the dire consequences are up front, that's a red flag, because usually there's a step, there are steps to get to the most dire consequences when it comes to violating the law or missing a payment.
Yeah. Go ahead. And by the way, I want to remind our listeners that you can participate in this conversation. Shame aside, this is a safe space. Have you or someone you know been scammed? You can share your story. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can leave your comments in the chat. Bob, I want to talk about entry points because, you know, you're thinking like, how did they even get my email? How did they, you know, get my phone number? How do they even know these facts about me? How do they know my name? Because sometimes it feels so personal. So how are these scammers getting access to this level of data from you or about you to where you can even be hooked into the scam?
That's such an important point, because so many of these scams are so personal, and that's why they're believable. I mentioned I've been writing about cybercrime since before Y2K. Well, I bet you have been hearing about big data leaks since before Y2K, right? Hundreds of millions of records being stolen from credit bureaus or from government agencies. All that data is sitting in these databases in the dark web that criminals can access. And so it's rather trivial to find out, you know, things like when your birthday is, what your dog's pet's, what your pet's name was, where, you know, the mascot of your high school. But it even goes more detailed than that. To answer the question that's always in everybody's head, how could you fall for that? Here's just an example of somebody I interviewed not too long ago, a woman who was recently widowed, married for 60-something years, and the day after her husband passed away, she gets a call from someone who says they're from her husband's insurance company, life insurance, and says, we have to do this in order to get a payout. And you know, imagine yourself after, you know, the grief alone, but then during funerals, you end up signing a million pieces of paper just to get it all out of the way, right? So you sign one more, but that one signs over your life insurance payment. And that's why we say over and over again on The Perfect Scam that if you haven't been the victim of a scam, it just hasn't been your turn yet. It's really all about the timing and circumstance. So the story that someone presents to you, if they get you in the right moment, under the right circumstances, you probably would be a victim too. And it's really important to have that mentality.
Yeah. Want to bring in a caller. We have Brad from Pottstown on the line. Brad, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I just wanted to point out a scam that they tried on my grandfather. My son was graduating from college, and they saw him listed in the graduating class, and they called his grandfather to say he had been arrested in town, you know, and under the influence, and that they needed bail money to release him. And my father called me to say my son had been arrested, and my reaction was, go right to jail, go to the county jail, and get him released. My dad went to the police station, and they said there was nobody there by that name. He went to the state police. There was nobody there by that name. He went to city police. There was nobody there by that name. There was a scam. Yeah. They were trying to get money, bail money for my son, but they scanned the graduating classes.
Wow.
For graduate names.
Thank you. That's Brad from Pottstown. I mean, that's one of the ways people get access to your information. And Bob, you know, the other day I was on Instagram and someone says, you know, what, give me some old names, like your grandmother's name. And people were literally listing names of grandmas and aunties. And somebody posted in the comments, you should not be doing this. These are security questions. So I just wonder, like, you know, just ordinary things people post online and they don't think about the privacy issues that could pop up and make them more vulnerable. Because I wonder, are the scammers getting this type of information just from ordinary posts?
I mean, I don't know specifically from that post, but yes is the answer. I mean, about every 4 months, another game comes around where, you know, you could click this button and it turns your face into a rabbit ears or something, right? Or see what you would look like when you were 110 years old. All of those things, people should just not engage with any of them. The cost benefit, there's no way to assess the cost benefit. This is one of the big problems with the internet. When you fill out a form, you play a game today, you don't know how it's going to be used against you 5 years from now. And so just don't engage.
Yeah. So that brings up the specter of the large social media companies. Mm-hmm. Their platforms are being used to collect people's information, mm-hmm. legally and illegally, and they're a key link in the chain of these scams. And I guess the question I have for you, Bob, is what responsibility do they bear, and could we change criminal statutes to make it so that they have to at least try to be aware of the scammers on their platforms?
Well, we as a society have to wrestle with this question, and we have to wrestle with it pretty immediately. There was a great Reuters story last week suggesting that Meta, specifically Instagram, Facebook, and other tools, plays a role in about a third of all scams that happen. Many of the first contacts happen over Facebook Messenger, for example, or Instagram. Instagram is a hotbed for cryptocurrency scams. And there's a lot more, a lot of us believe, that Meta could do specifically, social media in general, but Meta specifically could do.
Because their response, of course, is going to be, Bob, well, there's billions of accounts. How could we possibly figure out which of these are scammers, which of these are legitimate people? Is that a legitimate defense, or are there things that they could do to weed out bad actors?
If you owned a mall and you had a problem with gangs having fights in your mall, you would be forced to hire more security guards, just as a matter of business. And so I think these technology companies have for a long time gotten away with saying, well, you know, we're not committing the crime, we're not responsible for it. But if crime is happening using your tools under your nose for years and hurting millions of people to the tune of billions of dollars, I think you bear some responsibility, and we're going to have to figure that out.
And a quick follow-up to you, Bob, because according to Reuters, Meta earned about 10% of its ad revenue from scams and other prohibited ads. Are some of these platforms sort of getting a cut of, you know, from these victims in a sense that they're actually helping the scammers scam people?
Yeah, and that story also pointed out that Facebook had a scoring for whether this ad was a scam or not. And unless the ad scored stronger than 95%, they would allow it. So they knew there was a high statistical probability that these crimes were being committed, and they were collecting money for it. So again, this is a question for larger society, but I think we need to look at these platforms. And while I've been working in consumer education my whole life, the truth is consumer education is a small part of how we fix this problem. We need to go to the experts and the facilitators and choke this crime off at the origin point, because, you know, as we keep talking, I can educate people till I'm blue in the face, and still criminals are going to be often one step ahead.
Yeah, real quick, as we go to break, what's a potential fix, or like the outline of a potential fix? Because we can't fix human nature. We're always going to be psychologically vulnerable to scammers, as we have been for millennia. What is the system fix that can make it so the internet is not such an efficient facilitator of scams? We have about 45 seconds.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the beginning of when credit cards became the big deal that they are. As soon as there was a rule that said consumers aren't responsible for losses with their credit cards, credit card companies fought that, but credit cards themselves exploded. And I think we need to create some kind of liability akin to that, so these tech companies are more responsible for stuff that happens on their platforms.
All of a sudden, your credit card company is pretty darn interested in whether or not fraud is occurring. And
they will call you.
Is that Facebook, et cetera, don't seem all that interested. So that's a good point.
And by the way, I want to read this comment as we go to break. Caitlin on YouTube says, I'm 25. Each of my grandparents and my younger brother, he was 16 at the time, have fallen for scam messages in the last few years. It is so common. And it's not just people over a certain age, so many people are falling for this. So on the other side of this break, we're going to talk about law enforcement. We have someone who worked for the FBI coming up, and we want to hear more from you. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere. This is Studio 2.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We've been talking about scams this hour. They are getting more sophisticated, harder to spot, and are causing enormous amounts of financial and emotional damage. Still with us is Bob Sullivan, host of the AARP podcast, The Perfect Scam. And now we want to welcome in Eric O'Neill, a former FBI counterintelligence operative and author of Spies, Lies, and Cybercrime. Eric, welcome to Studio 2.
Cherry, Avi, great to be here. And Bob, good to be on the show with you.
And we would love to keep hearing from you in our audience. We want to hear if you have a scam story to share or how you protect yourself from falling victim to scams. 888-477-9499 is the number. The email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, as always, leave a comment in the chat.
And so, Eric, we want to bring you into the conversation by sort of starting with where scams fall on the priority list for law enforcement, because a lot of times we see these types of things proliferate because they're not necessarily being given top priority in your commentary on that.
Well, they're not. And I wish that they were given higher priority, but you have so many law enforcement officers and so many things that they are tracking down. And scams are very difficult for law enforcement. The anonymity of the dark web makes it very easy for cyber criminals and scammers and fraudsters to launch attacks in places that have no extradition to the U.S. And in fact, countries like Russia and China, two of the biggest threat actors against the United States, allow their cyber criminals to attack us with impunity and very rarely take any action against them. It's only when there is incredible pressure from our administration here and we can see them, and usually it's a critical infrastructure like attack. So, you know, what I've been saying for all these years is that we need to protect ourselves. We need to be the first line of defense against these scams. We are not going to, unfortunately, have law enforcement ride in and stop them. Now, they try. They do go into the dark web. They do smash their servers. They steal their decryption keys. They hand them out like Halloween candy to people who have been locked by ransomware. But bad guys have backups, too. And what they do is they just restore from backup. They use the same cybersecurity tactics of resilience, and they come back and they rebrand with a new name and launch attacks again.
Mm. Wow. Want to bring in another caller now. This is Barbara from Mount Laurel on line 3. Hey, Barbara, do you have a story to share about being scammed or an attempted scam?
Yes, I do. I had a shocking discovery this year when I noticed on my Medicare statements that over $50,000 had been charged, attributed to me for an operation in Florida. It took many phone calls with Medicare to even get some information from them. And I found out that the scam was through a company that was charging Medicare $18,000 for wound care dressings for my gender reassignment surgery. Mm-hmm. And Medicare not only paid it once, but after they were notified, they paid it again a couple months later, and now they're paying for my dialysis treatments from my gender reassignment surgery.
Hmm. Wow, and I'm you are not getting any of these services, correct?
Just no, to be clear. I'm a 74-year-old woman in New Jersey who's never been to Delray Beach, Florida. I checked on the internet. I found out that this company is just a P.O. box down in Florida. They've scammed people through my secondary insurance companies, lost $2 billion.
Wow.
Because they pay the 20% that Medicare doesn't pay. Wow. But I've reported it to everyone from my state senators, congressmen, the federal agencies, the Medicare. No, they just keep paying them. Meanwhile, the Medicare refused to pay my $90 chiropractor bill.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad at the very least you were able to get some resolution on the phony charges, and I'm sorry that the legitimate charges are still causing you issues. Thank you so much,
Barbara
from Mount Laurel.
Yes, everyone should check their statements.
Absolutely.
Be very vigilant about checking your Medicare statements if you're a senior.
Yeah,
Thank you.
I'll kick this back to you, Eric O'Neill. You talked about protecting yourself. So what can you do to protect yourself?
Barbara
says, check your statements. I guess that's a place to start.
She brings up an incredibly important point that I think everyone right now needs to have that identity theft monitoring. It's like installing cybersecurity. It's that early warning system that someone has stolen your identity, has your social security number, has your credit card, and is using it for fraud, because that early warning and then you can take action fast is one of the most important things to do. Barbara, if I were you, I would freeze my credit. You can go to each of the main credit agencies and request that they freeze. Now, actually, they make it easy. You can go online, use an account. Do not lose your password or two-factor authentication because it's very hard to get it back. And you can actually just toggle it on and off if you need to open up a credit card or get credit. But freezing your credit with those three agencies can help a lot. And this Medicare scam is like so many other scams where attackers are inserting them in a process that people rely on. And they know that there is a lot of fraud and abuse in Medicare, and they exploit that. And at the same time, they're using identities that they steal in order to file these false and sometimes malicious claims. And you see these PO boxes where people, and sometimes they're not even in the United States, are using them. And sometimes they hire people. They have criminals here in the U.S. who help facilitate it on their behalf. And they're pretty large and sophisticated gangs. And I'll just add, you know, law enforcement has trouble with this too. The IC3, the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, just issued a statement today that scammers are pretending to be the IC3 and are reaching out to people saying, you know, you've been the victim of a cybercrime. Wow. We're the FBI, and we're here to help you, and then scamming them.
Wow. I want to read this comment. Margaret says the pervasive power of scams can result in mistrust of factual information and offers of help people have requested. I was a volunteer, she says, calling to provide help to voters who have requested help with problems filling out mail-in ballots this fall. In a few cases, the individuals thought I could be an AI rather than a real person. And when I offered to text links to official PA voter information websites, some people worried that the website could be fake. And I want to talk about that a little bit. Can you give us some red flags? Because Bob talked about this earlier, Eric.
Right.
He said, look, you know, there used to be these little red flags where you could see typos in the emails, or you could look at it and you could tell that the email was from some weird country. But the AI proliferation in the scams has cleaned all that up. What are some red flags that should tell you, okay, this is not, I need to question this. This may not be real.
That's a really good point. And I've been saying for some time that thanks to AI and deepfakes, trust has become a very uncommon commodity. So we have to be very careful, whether it's a call from, I think Bob gave a quick example of a call from your daughter saying, I got in a car wreck. And then you're talking to the public defender who says, you need to wire me $2,000 or she's going to spend the next 2 weeks in jail. Or it's this belief, right? Because this is the thing that AI is doing. As we see more and more of it, people are not even believing what's true because they think it might be AI. So what can you do? The first thing is never fall for urgency. These scams are always going to try to put you in a position where there's urgency to do something right now, and you can't wait and you can't stop and take a breath and think. And like Bob said earlier, the best thing you can do is stop, take a breath, and reach out to a friend and say, does this sound right? The other thing is, if it sounds too good to be true, there's no way it's true. Just assume that it's a scam and then try to find a way to see if it is true. And you can do that through what we call like a second level verification. Reach out directly, in this case, to the voting registration administration, and then say, hey, is this true? Is this real? Always call with a line that you know is real, right? Or a way of communicating that you know, because you've researched and looked up, that this is their official number, as opposed to ever using anything that comes to you unsolicited. And that's just the world we're in right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of too good to be true, we've cited this number before, over $16 billion lost to internet criminals in the U.S. last year alone, 33% rise. Well, of that $16 billion, according to the FBI, $6.5 billion is from investment fraud. And I bet a lot of those investment offers do seem too good to be true. So something to watch out for. Victor from Overbrook is on the line and has a story to share. Victor, you're on Studio 2. What's your perspective?
Good afternoon. My kids are 18 and 19. And I just wanted to say that at their high school, which was a private high school, they both had internet safety courses that taught them how to avoid scams and also things like sexting and that kind of thing. And I think it's something that's really important, along with financial literacy in high schools, to teach kids how to do this. I remember in the 80s when I was growing up, and they did the big campaign about seatbelts. And everybody said, go home and tell your parents they have to wear your seatbelts. And all I know is I always wore my seatbelt and, you know, yelled at my dad and mom to wear theirs. And eventually they got the message. So I think if you teach the kids in high school, they'll tell their parents, they'll tell their grandparents. And that's a good first step, I think.
I like that call from Victor. However, I will say, like, you know, we have to take like cyber security training at work. And sometimes you do roll your eyes a little bit. You're like, is this really working? I do this once a quarter. Does this actually sink in? And so sometimes I'm a little skeptical of like education is the answer if we don't like actually change the systemic problems. But Bob, I'm curious for your take on like more formalized education as an answer to the problem here, or will we kind of some percentage of us always fall back into these traps because that's human nature? Your thoughts, Bob.
Well, I'm glad to hear your skepticism, which I share. I do think that it's a trap for, you know, large companies that are used. Well, it's a misdirection play, I would say. Large companies that are used for crimes to say, oh, we need to do education. We'll pay for some pamphlets. However, of course, education can play a role. And teenagers, you pointed out earlier, and I think this is going to surprise a lot of people, but while the consequences for elderly people who fall for scams are more severe because they're older and they often can lose almost all of their life savings or have it stolen from them, but younger people are actually more frequent victims of crimes. Mm-hmm. And so there are crypto crimes, for example, ravaging Instagram right now, and it usually begins with an account takeover. So you don't get a message from an unexpected person. You get a message from a friend, a longtime friend, who says suddenly, hey, I just invested in this new crypto coin. You should do it too. So I think training for young people is really important. And I interviewed the family of a young man who, a terribly horrible story, who was the victim of a sextortion crime and ultimately took his life a couple of months ago. And I can tell you that episode disturbed me for weeks. These stories are very, very sad. I just read about another example of this happening just a couple of days ago. And that's the kind of thing that we really need to educate young people about. And that story is so deeply about shame. And, you know, somebody went from nowhere to a contact to within 3 hours of taking their own lives because of what happened in a sextortion scam. And so we do need to do all of these things. And education is actually an important component.
Wow. I want to bring in another caller. We have Marita from Flemington on the line. Marita, you're on Studio 2. I hope I said your name right. What's your story?
It's not a story. It's very simple. There's a function on most phones, on my Android, and I think on all phones, that it's an app, and you can put it in, and it says screen call. And if your system doesn't recognize the network,
and we lost Marita there. But
don't answer the phone is a perfectly good piece of advice nowadays.
And I want to throw this out there because Alan from Bridgeton says, why can't telecommunications companies stop spam callers? I mean, you know, especially, I mean, I'm a journalist. Sometimes I get calls from people who are not in my contacts, and sometimes I answer. So I just wonder, like, are there protections that people can employ that would keep some of these scammers away? And I guess Eric, you could comment. Yeah,
sure. You can add your phone number to the do not call registry and it won't really do a lot of good. It'll stop some of the spam, the legitimate spam, but unfortunately not the criminal spam. You know, the best thing you can do is like Bob said, don't answer the call. You know, now I don't have an Android. I have an Apple. And they have this great new feature where you can ignore it. It goes to voicemail and you can in real time see the voicemail on your phone in text. I love this because then I can decide whether I want to answer or not. But my rule is never to answer a phone call that I don't recognize, that's not in my contacts. If it's important, they'll leave a voicemail. And never, ever respond to a text. You will get texts all day long that just say, hey, or I missed you at the barbecue, or hey, how's it going? We saw each other last week at the party, or just random things. These are smishing attacks. It's a text phishing attack that are trying to find polite people who respond. And when you respond, they will get you into a long conversation. They're looking for lonely people. They're looking for people who are polite. And they're looking for people who need a friend. And that can be an incredible gateway to romance fraud, to a financial pig butchering attack, to so many other ways of scamming you.
As we get ready to wrap up, where is all this heading? What's the frontier of cybercrime? I have this great quote from Bruce Schneier at Harvard, says, watch where the computers go. That's where the crime goes. Well, we have self-driving cars now. I mean, where computers are really everywhere. Yeah. Real quick, Eric, what's the next wave?
Certainly, I think cybercrime is going to grow. This year, we're going to see, and into 2026, we're going to see an explosion of deepfake attacks. It's going to make it much harder to detect these crimes. Cybercrime has grown to over $14 trillion in this year. By next year, it'll be 18, and the following year, over 20. That makes it larger than the third largest economy on Earth. And so what I think technology has to do to respond is to use our own AI to defend against it. And I will bet within the next number of months, we're going to be seeing companies that provide some sort of layer that we install that is a deepfake detector. That's where a lot of the cybersecurity companies are going. And so when you're on your phone and you get a call, it'll pop up and say something like 98% deepfake.
The cat and mouse game never ends. Eric O'Neill, former FBI counterintelligence operative and author of Spies, Lies, and Cybercrime, thank you so much for your insights this hour.
Thanks, Abby. Thanks, Cherry.
And same to you, Bob Sullivan, host of the AARP podcast, The Perfect Scam. Bob, invaluable stuff. Really appreciate your time.
Can I steal 10 seconds from you? Because people don't have anyone to talk to. AARP offers a free helpline at 1-877-908-3360. You can call and ask, is this a scam? And absolutely, it's free to anyone. You don't have to be a member.
Thank you so much. And thank you to our producers, Debbie Bilder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryan. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. Thank you so much for joining us.